Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening.
Of Galilee, and was baptized by John in the Jordan. And just as he was coming up out of the water, he saw the heavens torn apart and the Spirit descending like a dove on him. And a voice came from heaven, "You are my Son, the Beloved. With you I am well pleased."
This is the water on which God breathed and the Spirit brooded when God began creating all of us. All creeping things, all races, male and female.
This is the water that drove up the trunk of the tree whose branches bore the fruit we were not to taste.
This water covered the earth deeper than the Himalayas, when God wanted to start over. This is the foot of the rainbow that's meant to tell us God won't destroy the creation again.
This is the water of the river Jabbok, where Jacob still wrestles with God. This is the well where Joseph was left for dead by all of his jealous brothers.
This is the water that opened at Moses' command, and the people moved into freedom out of slavery.
This is the water by which Miriam and the women danced the rhythms of liberation.
This very water sprung from the rocks in the desert when the people started whining because they wanted things to go back to the way they used to be.
These are the salty tears shed by King David when Nathan accused him of the worst sin. These are the tears shed when he pleaded for God's forgiveness and received it.
These are the waters of Babylon, by which our ancestors sat down and wept, their harps and tongues silent for homesickness.
And this is the water that broke in a barn in Bethlehem.
Out of this very water, John pulled a stunned Jesus in the River Jordan. The day that they saw the dove come down and heard from deep within a voice crying out, "You are my son, the beloved, and with you my heart sings for joy."
Water that became wine at a wedding in Cana.
Peter sauntered on this water and then sank and then was rescued, setting the pattern for a disciple's life.
This is the well in Samaria where Jesus chatted unchaperoned with a so-called disreputable woman. This is the living water that quenched her thirst forever and restored her dignity.
That came from his mouth when he restored hearing to those who could not hear, when he restored sight to those who could not see.
And this is the water that he used to cut the wine at his last meal.
These are the tears that fell that last night in the garden.
And this is the sink that Pilate used to wash his hands when he passed a death sentence.
And these are the wet faces of the women whose grief at the cross could not be quenched.
This is what Jesus thirsted for at the hour of his death.
This is the tomb from which Christ blasted. This is the opening. This is the way.
This is the water that binds us to him and him to us when shame and sin and death are destroyed. This is the water that reminds us of who we are and whose we are.
Trouble the water.
been a gift. It's actually a gift to touch the water that we will use in just a few moments to baptize these 8 folks. It was a gift to spend time with you all these last few weeks to talk about the significance of baptism and to hear the ways in which these folks long to root their lives in grace, to grow in faith, and to reach in love. Some of the folks who will be baptized could tell you, and you might want to ask them, the most powerful experiences that they've had that have led them to this place. And they could tell you about moments, some of them very recent, where their life has turned around. And other folks in this group may not have words for it. They just feel something deep within. And some folks in this group have been looking for a place that felt like home for a long while. And they finally stumbled through these doors or found the courage to walk into a church for the first time in a long time. And they're feeling God moving in their lives. The waters of baptism initiate us into the church. They make God's story our story. See, baptism is an active remembering of God's great works. It's why we gather with the drumming and with the stories, because the act of baptism brings all that has been into this moment of all that is, and then carries us forward into all that will be. It's easy to think, and I do this often, that baptism is a one-time moment in our lives. For many of us, we could look back and remember when that moment was, or we might have been too small, like that beautiful baby right there, to know when that moment was, but others can tell us about that. Baptism is a retelling of God's story so that we're remembered together back into Christ's body, the church. That one-time thing, though, is significant to me because our daughter just turned 3. And the last few nights, we've been gathering together with water and with a candle to remember her baptism from a few years ago. And we have circle time. For those at the Montessori school, you'll know what I'm talking about. And then it was circle time. We move around with the water to give thanks for each of the stuffed animals in the room. So we've been living in baptism for a while, but had you told me this, I thought baptism just happened that one moment, kind of like childbirth. If anyone has had that experience of either accompanying their partner in giving birth or giving birth yourself, you know that there are so many classes in the world that you can take about how to do this well. Sarah and I went over to Berkeley to take a class on mindfulness and childbirth. We like held ice against ourselves to try to be present and patient and be present in that moment. And then we took classes at Sutter on breathing techniques. We had all of these different classes. They didn't really say a lot, though, about after that moment, your life is going to be like, there were no classes that I found on this. And so we do this often in our culture where we think that this moment is it. And then we realize it's just a beginning. It's just a start. There's a pastor, and her name, I believe the way you say it, is Danielle Schroyer, and she's in Texas. And she writes about it this way. What happens in baptism doesn't stay in baptism. Or at least it shouldn't. Baptism gives us traveling shoes. Then again, there's something that stays in baptism, she says, the indelible mark of belovedness. It's the proclamation that belovedness has been given to us, and dare I say that the power of this belovedness allows us to face evil incarnate and wild, hungry beast and come out on the other side telling folks about good news. So listen to it again in the Gospel of Mark. And just as Jesus was coming out of the water, he saw the heavens torn apart and the Spirit descending like a dove on him, and a voice came from heaven, "You are my Son, the Beloved. With you I am well pleased." And from that moment, Jesus goes right out into the wilderness, and he sets out facing the powers that be, breaking bread with folks that he's not supposed to be seated next to. He starts asking questions of folks that think they have all the answers. And when those folks come back with him with questions, he asks another question to them. He turns everything upside down and inside out over and over. He lives, though, deeply from this place of knowing, feeling in the depths of his bones that God says, "You are beloved. With you, I am well pleased." We've been trying to reflect these last, this is our fourth week of this series, reflecting on Healing the Heart of Democracy, which is by a Quaker teacher and writer named Parker Palmer. We're attempting to discern in this pivotal time in our nation's history how we are to carry our faith lives into the democratic process. We began the series by wondering together about how God reminds us that we're all in this together. And then the following week, we looked at how God calls us to embrace otherness, that God comes to us as other and forever calls us to love that which we might see initially as other in our lives. And last week, we looked at how easy it is to get caught up in narratives of scarcity and how God keeps calling us back to ways of abundance. And this morning, we reflect on baptism and how this mark of belovedness sets us off on a new journey. And so I want to tell a short story this morning. And this story is coming to us from Parker Palmer. He tells this story, I was with him this summer, and he's told this story also in a book called Healing the Heart of Democracy. And the story is about a man whose name is John Woolman. And John Woolman is a Quaker. So I want to have an aside moment because I know some of us have no idea what a Quaker is. And I'm going to use some different words. So a Quaker is kind of like a Methodist or a Presbyterian or a Lutheran. They commit themselves to a way of nonviolence as they follow Jesus. And the shorthand that they use for each other, which I love, is friend. And so Quakers call each other friends. And they don't have church, they have meetings. All right, that's Quaker 101 by on the spot. I haven't really read a ton about it. Lived with some folks for a while, that's all I got. So you can learn a lot more if you would like. So John Woolman is a Quaker and he's living around, he's born in 1720 and he lives until 1772. And he had an experience, he calls it a leading from God. And he felt deep within his bones that if he was a beloved child of God, that all the people he encountered were beloved children of God. But the trouble with that in 1720 was that many of his fellow Quakers had enslaved people working for them. And so John Woolman felt God leading him to say, "This injustice cannot be the way." And so he went to his meeting. And in Quaker style, they gathered in silence, and he felt this leading from God, and then he had the courage to give voice to that leading among those folks. And in the Quaker community, you don't move forward until you have consensus. None of this 50% plus one, and let's carry on leading everybody behind. It's we are going to wait and listen for God's leading in our lives as a community together until we find consensus. Now, anybody with rationality will tell you that is a really crazy and slow way to think about going forward. Like, the Quakers clearly are not going to lead the way on changing the world when they need to get every single person on board before they step out. What happened in his little meeting, though, it's kind of like our kitchen tables. So they gathered together to watch over each other in love and to figure out how are they doing harm and doing good. And as he shared this, his people said, "We're not of one mind, but we want to keep listening for how God is moving in this. So we're going to take care of your family while you travel up and down the East Coast meeting with other Quakers to tell them that God has put this on your heart to free God's people." And so his community surrounded him in love, and in 1746, he started walking his talk. And he wore only undyed clothes because he knew that dyed clothes had been created and died by people who were enslaved. And when he would sit down at a meal, and he knew that the meal had been prepared by enslaved folks, enslaved people, he would fast. And then if he would find out along the way that somehow he thought he was doing no harm, but he'd made a mistake, he would go and find the person that had been enslaved and pay them for the service that they had provided that he wasn't aware of. You can imagine Quakers are like other folks. This didn't go over very well. They had a whole economy that they had come to expect created on the literal backs and lives of God's people. And so he started to share and to listen and to reflect this deep contradiction that there is the light of God in every person, and yet Quakers and so much of our society was not living that out. So he held that tension. For 20 years, he walked up and down the East Coast, sitting in on meetings, telling folks about how God was leading him. And then in 1783, Quakers petitioned Congress to correct the complicated evils and unrighteous commerce created by enslavement. See, 80 years before the Civil War, Quakers came to consensus about God's light and dignity in every single person. That's a phenomenal story of one person feeling called by God as a beloved child and then going out into the wilderness to see that God's love and justice had not yet been experienced by all of God's people, and finding the voice of God within him to say his truth out loud. Parker Palmer continues in this way: "The impulses that make democracy possible and those that threaten it originate in the heart, with its complex mix of heedless self-interest and yearning for community. From there, these impulses move out into our relationships with our families and our neighbors, our workplaces, and the various public settings that we find ourselves. These are the places where John Woolman's life made a difference by simply walking and talking with deep persistence the love that God had placed inside of him and sharing how that love was for each and every person. These are the places where we can make a difference." And this isn't what happens oftentimes in this political environment. We tend to think about politics as something out there. It's the powers that be. It's legislatures and lobbyists. It's caucuses and boardrooms. We forget about the politics of the everyday. And Palmer describes this as one of our deepest mistakes, of our sins, our brokenness. See, democracy depends on ordinary people like John Woolman, energized rather than defeated by whatever breaks their heart, and taking step after step after step in their own communities and beyond to point toward God's inbreaking kingdom. See, what happens in baptism does not stay in baptism. The mark of that belovedness that was placed on John Woolman's heart meant that he had to walk that each and every day. And this morning, I invite all of us, myself included, to place our hope and our trust in the way and the life and the death and the resurrection of this one that God sent into the world that we might find a way, Jesus. And in all of this, may we find ourselves walking in the footsteps of John Woolman and all of those folks that died the clothes that folks took for granted. May we follow their way and see that these waters of new life are coming to us from old to recarve the depths of grace into our lives For baptism does not stay in baptism. Each and every day, belovedness calls us on. May we flow in those rivers. Amen.
What a river, traced in sculpting me, in sculpting me.